Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I am Summer Brooks, and today we are herding cats, known as discussing the Marvel TV universe. And with me today is a crew of well-known comics nerds, including our very own Darren Gulzvig. Say hello, Darren.
Howdy, howdy.
And next we have Daryl, who's returning.
Hi, folks. Yep, back again.
Tell folks a little bit.
The folks should remember me from the Superstition telecast. I'm a blurred correspondent for Afro Nerd Radio, and blog writer for Comic Book Underground. So, what the hell? If it's comics and TV sci-fi related, I'm your man. Let's do this thing.
And last but not least, we have Desmond, who is also part of Afro Nerd Radio. Welcome, Desmond.
Yes, welcome. Thank you. Great discussion, I suspect, on Marvel comic books and Marvel Netflix, I should say. Yeah, Daryl is my co-discussant on our weekly program where we talk about all things blurdy and nerdy and science, STEM, whatever. Current events, we're all about it, so we're ready to dig on in.
Now, I will warn everyone ahead of time, I am a little behind on my Marvel Netflix shows. I have not seen Iron Fist. I have not seen Defenders. I have not seen Punisher. I have heard all of the possible mocking there has to be about Iron Fist, but I am still curious. I want to see the show. But where in the discussion of first round, second round of the Marvel shows, because I'm a big fan of the first round, season one of Daredevil, season one of Luke Cage, season one of Jessica Jones. I actually thought Jessica Jones and Daredevil were tied for the tops, with Luke Cage being just a hair below that. But the second rounds, I have not finished getting all the way through. So where would you rank the seasons of the shows in terms of favorites?
All right, guys, you want me to take this one first?
Go ahead.
All right. In terms, if I had to rank them, Punisher was really good. Punisher was really good. I gotta go Punisher, then Daredevil season two, then Defenders, then Iron Fist. The reason why, well, is acting-wise, Jon Bernthal is a beast. Yo, that, simply put, he steals every scene he's in Punisher, and he makes you feel for him, and then he does something where, okay, that's why I hate this son of a, you know? Daredevil season two, roller coaster ride. It's a roller coaster ride, but in my opinion, it wasn't as strong as season one. Defenders, geeky team-ups. It was fun, and one of the biggest indicators I had was I was, like, the whole way looking at Defenders, this is how Iron Fist was supposed to be during Iron Fist. Which leads me to the last part of Phase 2, Iron Fist. Simply put, when your star doesn't put in the work on the action scenes, and they get cut up the way they were cut up, and you could tell all the other actors have put in work, you know, it drags the whole thing down. But the girl playing Colleen, ace. The girl, the guy playing the main villain, ace. And I even forgot with the Defenders, Yos. I had no idea that Sigourney Weaver could play a bad guy like that, but Sigourney Weaver could play a bad guy like that. So when you get around to seeing the Phase 2 shift on Netflix, you will be entertained. And again, Iron Fist was decent, except for the fact that, my dude, if you're going to be the Iron Fist, yo, you got to put in that work, son. You got to put in that work. All right, floor's open.
Well, I was going to say, starting off from the first season, I agree with you, Summer. I thought the Daredevil and Luke Cage and Jessica Jones, those were all, obviously, it started off with a bang. Daredevil season two, I loved it. I was a little apprehensive with the Elektra, the way they handled that, but still, it was nice. Iron Fist was freaking awful. Everything about Iron Fist that I loved in the comic was somehow lost in translation. And that obviously continued with the Defenders, which I thought could have had some potential. And I think the problem we're running into is you know, the showrunner, the Metzner, or whatever that dude's name is kind of gotten away from the first thing that I enjoyed about Luke Cage and Daredevil. And there was a sense of realism with that, but it also was light and fun. And I think there's a sense of nihilism that's right now kind of predominant in all these Netflix series. And you know, I'm still in the middle of Punisher, so I can't make a comment on that. I'm still watching it. I'm liking Berthenol's performance. I mean, obviously he's always intense, and I think that's what you want in Punisher. But again, it's the sense of just doomsday and down and dark, and I don't know. After a while, it gets kind of grating a little bit. But nonetheless, I mean, because this is supposed to be a freaking superhero show, and you're supposed to have a little fun. And I don't need to be reminded of all the bullshit of day-to-day out that happens. And so, I enjoyed the first go-off with Netflix and everything, and I was really excited about it. And, you know, coming to the third wave, I'm definitely excited about Luke Cage. I thought that, you know, loved everything about that, of course. But again, it's just, I hope it gets away from this overall seriousness and it kind of enjoys, it has a little fun, you know? Like, what's wrong with Luke Cage wearing a costume, or what's wrong with Iron Fist actually wearing his costume that looks kind of like the way we, you know, growing up? And I don't know. I'm still hopeful, you know, but kind of gotten a little, I don't know. I don't want to say too judgery, but we'll see how it goes.
All right. I respect your opinion, but I have to confess that I actually like the seriousness of the Marvel Netflix imprints thus far, and I like the gravitas that Marvel has kind of given these properties. When I first heard that Marvel was going to do some of their properties on Netflix, I didn't know what to expect. I thought it was going to be cheap and cheesy. I had no idea it was going to be the type of acting prowess that's involved. I mean, when you think of someone like, well, I'm going off tangent. Let me go into ranking a little bit, then I'll go a little deeper into it. Daredevil season one to me was meant, being a long time Daredevil supporter, Daredevil fan. Vincent D'Onofrio as Wilson Fisk, the door scene. There was up to a certain point. Like, I'm looking at this thing, and I'm like, okay, I'm enjoying it, but how do I know this guy is the kingpin? When he has these rages, and he flips out on that guy and smashes his head between the door, I said, damn it, that's the kingpin. I can't believe they're doing it. So, for me, Daredevil season one was just it. Charlie Cox's performance, everything, even when he wasn't, you know, when he had the ninja style thing, that's part of the Frank Miller storyline, where, you know, there's certain things that you're looking for, whether you're especially if you're a comic book fan, and you know if you're really into this stuff, you kind of do want to see or point to things that remind you of what you were looking at when you were a kid. So there were things, certain beats, his Catholicism, all that. I said, wow, they're really doing it. And they're doing it seriously. So number one was Daredevil. I had to say, even season two, one and two to me were tops. The return of Vincent D'Onofrio when he's in jail and when he meets Bernthal, and when Bernthal, that hallway fighting scene where he fights everybody. That was it. I said, you can't get any better than that. Jessica Jones would be after that for me, because David Tennant as the Purple Man was frightening. His superpower is frightening. That as superpowered beings, that people that can crush bricks and everything, it's irrelevant to somebody when they can control your mind. So I just thought that the way he portrayed it, how is she going to get out of this? I thought it was excellent. Then Luke Cage. Luke Cage, my only problem with Luke Cage is that I didn't think there was great follow-through after episode 6. Once Cottonmouth was killed, it went off the rails.
I could not agree with you more. Actually, I was going to say that. I thought, you know, portrayal as far as Cottonmouth by, what's his face, Mahershala Ali or something.
Right.
His yeah. performance was freaking so good, and I was really disappointed when he died. And, you know, I don't know. I just, from the comic books, as a child reading those, it just, they seemed to really capture that. But you're right, it kind of lost its wheels there after he died. But I still enjoyed it.
Well, first of all, you know, it also kind of tapped into the notion of neo blaxploitation. Like, I you know, I love blaxploitation films, but they were problematic, but we look at them kind of in a comical way. But now, you know, you can consider this maybe the foray, since Black Lightning seems to be kind of getting some shine now also. We're starting to see some of this stuff smoothed out, straightened out, taken more seriously, and having the blaxploitation feel, but not so foolish. The music, it's in Harlem. Just the level of acting, I mean, it was on point. Defenders and Iron Fist, to me, Iron Fist is pretty much, it's just, I don't even want to go into it that deeply. It just wasn't good. It just wasn't good. I defer to my co-discussants, but I'm done. Those Defenders was pretty cool. I was geeky about it, seeing everybody together. They got the band together. That's fine. But the last band member, which Danny Rand, he doesn't do it for me.
Mm. I'm looking forward to seeing where they go with Defenders. I'm actually looking forward to seeing Defenders, but I read the Defenders comic back in the day. I didn't so much get into Heroes for Hire, but I see from what they were setting up in Defenders, what, you know, what little bit I saw, what articles I read, plus some of the scenes that they're shooting for Luke Cage season 2, they're trying to set up a Heroes for Hire, and I'm not so sure that's a good idea. I think Heroes for Hire should stay in the background and just be little in-jokes that get referred to during Defenders, because that shows the camaraderie between Luke and Danny that is missing. It could bring some of that lightheartedness that needs to be in some of these shows. Granted, I'm a fan of the grim and gritty, but there's also a place for the lighthearted humor. And there could be a little bit more in some of the shows. Daredevil season 1, not really a place for it. Jessica Jones season 1, not really a place for it. But I think there's room to lighten up certain areas in these shows, and without losing the overall aesthetic of the feel of this part of the Marvel universe that's trying to be set up.
You know what? I'm as excited from Luke Cage because I got the feeling they may be bringing Daughters of the Dragon, which, you know, I was a huge fan of Heroes Prior, and I that excites the hell out of me.
Yeah, and that's where I've heard this a lot from male fans especially. Oh, I didn't like Jessica Jones in her own series, but you know what? In Defenders, she was like the comic relief. She was making fun of everything. And I looked at them like, yeah, okay, the whole reason for Jessica Jones was to set up that she has this acid wit. She has this thing that when she meets these other guys that do like larger than life things, she was like, here I am trying to be normal, and you guys are going to get me into all this weird stuff. and what? Listen, Summer, when you get a chance to check out Defenders, all you need to hear is the conversation she has with Matt Murdock in the Chinese restaurant. Right there, you'll be like, yeah, girl, yeah, yeah, I don't understand why he does that either. You know, that's part of the humor. It's a dark humor, as Darren brought up. Everything is grim and gritty, even the humor. But there is humor, at least when they get to Defenders, because you see all those personalities clash. And for me, it worked more often than it fell flat.
That's what I had seen. There was one clip where Luke Cage, like Danny Rand, is going off and I'm the immortal Iron Fist, and Luke Cage is like, what the hell does that mean?
Yeah. And that joke does not stop. It keeps on going.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah, I think that you know, we have on our show, we have Claire Lene, a person you may want to have on your show as well. And she's of Vietnamese descent. She's an actress on the West Coast. And, you know, the subject of cultural appropriation and yellow face and all that, and the kind of the Tarzan feel to Iron Fist. I mean, it's just a lot of he's a problematic character, you know. And I grew up with Danny Rand, you know, knowing he was blonde and the whole thing, and I didn't necessarily have a problem with it. But when you get older, you start to see that he's a problematic character, and we're in a different space. I thought that if anything, and I think she will even confess to this, I think if anything, if they had a better charismatic actor who might have had some athletic prowess approaching that role,
mm-hmm.
and then also introducing someone like Shang-Chi, the master of Kung Fu, into that mythology. And actually, well, I find his story more fascinating than Iron Fist. And you've heard me go into this rant on our own show. You know, I was concerned that if we were looking to make Danny Rand Asian, biracial, or just Asian, I have no problems with that. But then what do we do with Shang-Chi, who is a far more compelling character? And maybe if we were able to introduce, and maybe we might see in season two, maybe, if there was a way to introduce that character, because they've essentially made him into kind of a James Bond character. But, you know, the issue is many of these characters, especially the minority characters, they had to be rehabilitated when they were first created. Luke Cage cannot, you know, they snuck in a Sweet Christmas, mm-hmm. and it was cute. But in the early 70s, you know, his dialogue was problematic. So over the years, they really had to straighten him out. And pretty much the same thing would have had to have happened for Shang-Chi. And even Iron Fist, to a certain degree, they're going to have to deal with the fact that, you know, you have this guy who's kind of, there is a sense of cultural appropriation. He is the martial arts version of Tarzan. There's some things going on. But if he's more charismatic and killed that role, we probably wouldn't be saying anything. True. So that's also other side of it.
At the same time, I agree with what you're saying there as far as, you know, appropriation. But the fact is, as a child growing up reading the comic book, I always thought it was fascinating that somebody of Anglo descent could go into this environment and be accepted and also become a brother of one's as such, you know, and it had a very Batman-esque quality to the actual mythology. And I kind of walked the line because I always believe in being honorable to the source material, and I can totally sympathize with agree with what you're saying. You know, Master of Kung Fu, for me, was always the baddest ass because, you know, he worked in these fights and didn't have any powers except his own guile and, you know, internal fortitude. And that was always really awesome. And, you know, and I'm kind of the opinion that I wish they would bring that back too. But again, from a narrative point of view, I don't have much of a problem. I have a bigger problem with them casting Finn Jones on the same lines that you mentioned, that not athletic, but for me, dude can't act.
Yeah.
Terrible actor.
Well, that's part of the problem right there. Finn Jones didn't put in the work. All right? Like I said, to me, again, it's an unpopular opinion. To me, how he was in Defenders, that's how he should have been starting out as Iron Fist. He was much more Iron Fist in Defenders than he was in Iron Fist. Iron Fist started out the way they play him. I'm sitting back there with years upon years of comic knowledge. I go, this guy beat the dragon and stuck his fist in his molten heart. This guy, at least in Defenders, he shows he's more capable, you know? And like, okay, that's how they should have began with him.
Mm-hmm.
and then I think there would be less of a problem. Okay. Like I said, with Defenders, you can see that Scott Buck's fingerprints in humans too. Scott Buck's fingerprints wasn't as much on Defenders as it was on Iron Fist. Like, okay, yeah, dude, we got what your picture of Iron Fist was. Just take a seat over in the corner. It'll come back to you.
So do you
stay in the corner? Let's go.
do you think Iron Fist would have been better served if they had actually found someone who was an accomplished martial artist, somebody more like Keanu Reeves and less like, Ferris Bueller.
Oh, yeah. But that's the funny thing, because we got proof, right? Afro Nerd is on with us, okay? Before we heard about John Wick, right? He can attest. I was like, Keanu Reeves is going to play the assassin. I start laughing on the show. Oh, this thing's going to suck. This is going to... Keanu's going to do straight-up fight scenes. Right. Then we watched John Wick. Then I came on the air, like, 2 days after watching John Wick. And I went, I got to eat a whole bunch of humble pie. Oh, my God. Those fight scenes were smooth. Right. So, essentially, what I said about Finn Jones, I would say about Keanu. Then John Wick happened, and I'm like, okay. Keanu made me a believer. I was saying the same thing about Finn Jones. Then yeah. Iron Fist happened, and I'm still saying the same thing about Finn Jones.
It's just when you got a character like Mike Coulter, you know, who's just like this, he embodies Power Man and Luke Cage, and he's just like this physical specimen, and he's a hell of an actor too. And I think when you pair him up with Finn Jones, there's number one, no chemistry between the two, which is so important with the backstory as they grow. And number two, he just makes Finn Jones look like a freaking B actor, which, you know, again, I know that show has had many problems on so many different levels. But for me, just out of the gate, I think Finn was a bad choice.
I tell you something that you might find interesting. And I thought this was the person they were actually going to choose because there was word on the street. And he looks like Iron Fist still. He's a little older, but he still looks like a young guy. Ryan Phillippe. His name was name was initially attached to Iron Fist. Now, I respect him as an actor. Like once I heard his name, I was like, oh, okay, we're good. Because I've seen, I know he can act. I know what he's able to do. And then all of a sudden, it kind of that talk disappeared. And then this Finn Jones character came around. Now I suspect it might have been an age thing. Although Ryan Phillippe seems to be one of those Tom Cruise dudes that seem to be able to age very well. Because I think he's in his early 40s. But I mean, he still looks like a young dude. He looks like he's like in his late 20s to me. But I thought that he would have been excellent, and I think he would have had enough gravitas to kind of mix it up with someone like Mike Coulter. And I thought it would have been fantastic. So, but they want this Finn Jones. I know him from Game of Thrones, but other than that, I don't think the guy was really good for this role.
Now, Ryan Phillippe, refresh my memory. He was the bad guy in Lincoln Lawyer opposite Matthew McConaughey, right?
Yeah, well, he was in what was this thing he did with? He was married to Reese Witherspoon, and what was that from like 20 years ago? He was in that kind of teen murder.
Oh, Sweet Home Alabama.
No. It was like not that.
I never saw that. My favorite Ryan Phillippe role was where he was the lawyer opposite
Cruel
Anthony
Intentions.
Hopkins.
Cruel Intentions.
He was a lawyer opposite Anthony Hopkins. And F.P. Hopkins pulled off a murder, and everybody thought he was innocent except for Phillippe. And I think the name of it was Fracture. And he had to hold several like scenes down opposite Anthony Hopkins. Okay. And he held his own. And I'm like, yo, this guy needs to be a bigger star. And then what's the next thing I see him in? Some SNL MacGyver spoof. And I'm like, really? really? That's the next thing I see this dude in? Damn.
There's all the actors on the Netflix shows. I really, you know, Cox, they, you know, I think they did a good job with him. But it's like, why is it all these English actors, they always seem to fall back on? Are they just, I don't get it. But
it's anyway, the British invasion.
Yeah, right. All the Netflix shows, the one I've actually watched twice was Luke Cage. I thought the music on it, the setting, you know, it was just, and I think the problem is a lot of these shows is they have a villain problem other than, you know, obviously Copperhead and Kingpin, which was obviously amazing. But for the most part, I haven't been really, you know, entertained with the idea of who they're supposed to be, you know, this villain issue. And I think that actually goes, you know, to the movies that are being played on the big screen as well. I think maybe we'll see how Thanos works out, but I think it's been a problem in all the Marvel movies and such, this villain issue.
Yeah. Yeah, but the villains, I have been disappointed because it seems like the villains were an afterthought until we got to the Purple Man. David Tennant knocked that out of the park. He really, really did. Kingpin, D'Onofrio, like, you know, the escalator scene was the, oh, that's Kingpin moment.
That was bad. It was crazy.
And
it
then
enough of that. You know, we don't have enough of him. I really want that because you're right. I mean, I've been reading Daredevil even, I mean, when Gene Colan was the artist, you know, and just there's a certain vibe with it, which is why when it first came out, I was like just freaking, and I was happier than a pig in shit, you know. I was just like, oh my God, this is so perfect. Mm-hmm. But then, like I said earlier, it kind of took on that formula and it hasn't let go of it, I guess. But I agree with what you're talking about, the Defenders. You know, there was a little bit of humor, and I enjoyed that, you know.
Yeah, it's an American problem. If you look at the American movies, you know, every time you get a decent villain, oh, we got to kill him off. No, you don't. Oh, we got to make him fun. No, you don't. He's a villain.
Mm-hmm.
We got to sympathize with. No. I'm tired of this great. Stop the great. He's a bad guy. Stop it with making Dr. Doom the grand uncle of the Fantastic Four. Don't give me a more personal, like, Lex, you know? So, Dr. Octopus, you guys ruined for me and Spider-Man 2, you know? We won't even get into what they did with Venom or Green Goblin, you know? It's the thing going throughout. Listen, the only villain you could do that with, because it is the dude's nature, is Loki. Why? He's the prince of lies. He's the god of lies. So one second, he'll be buddy-buddy with you, and the next second, you'll be in the middle of a battle, and he's trying to put a knife in your back. That's just his nature. He can't be good, you know? Or if he's good, he will follow that up with doing something extremely bad. But America likes to, A, reveal the hero's secret identity to everything, B, kill the bad guys even though they're good. You know, even when, oh, they got to die at the end. No, they don't. What about if we got a sequel? We'll think about that when the time comes. Hi, Fox. Hi, Sony. Looking at you, too. Mm-hmm. Hi. Yeah. You know, or they'll do like Magneto and Professor X and revolve a whole movie franchise around them while cutting their balls off at the same time, to the point where X-Men fans are like, you know, the X-Men got more villains than this. And when can we get a bloody Sentinel up in here? You know? So I think, to Darren's point, it is an American problem when it comes to the villain thing. It's not just Marvel Netflix. They don't know how to, we're going to lock this villain up for a long time, or the villain escapes at the end, but at least the heroes save the country or the city or whatever. They can't just do that. They're like, we want blood. Except when it comes to Batman, because somehow the Joker always lives.
Well, I liked the fact that Cottonmouth needed to die to make room for
Black Mariah. Black Mariah.
And
Diamondback.
And Diamond, is it Diamondback or Copperhead?
Oh. Okay. It's Diamondback.
Those two.
Diamondback was the brother, and it shades with Mariah.
Right. And those two coming in future seasons is going to be great. So Cottonmouth did have to die. I just thought he was eliminated way too soon, because you had three episodes there where it felt like there was no backbone. There was a soft spot before you got to the end and went, oh, hell. And it is a villain problem. People, Americans in their entertainment, we have this myth of truth, justice, and the American way, or, you know, liberty and justice for all. We know in real life that's not a thing. We want to believe it's a thing, but sometimes we get punched in the mouth with the truth.
The reason why HBO to has improved the last three seasons is they've built up the villain. The villain's built up. You see the villain, hey, Dez, machinations, right?
Machinations, right?
Okay. You see them building up, so it's not a direct fight and then bap. You see the villains like Ada, the Darkhold and Ghost Rider's uncle, whatever his name was. This season, the Kree. You know, they've been building up the villains so that, and the framework, and so that it's like they lay the, each episode lays a thing down. The reason why Luke Cage, that thing didn't work. You could have killed Copper. You could have, then, that would have worked. But in earlier episodes, you built up Diamondback. Like, little by little, show a little vignette of Diamondback coming, or show scenes with him where the crowd, where automatically it isn't, boom, I'm back here for you, Luke. You shouldn't have left without me. Like, who is this dude? We just went through 8 episodes. I'm expecting a big confrontation with Shades and Mariah, and I gotta go through this dude? Who is this dude? And all of a sudden, we have a deep history, like, but you didn't build him up. If you built him up and laid those foundations down, then when he shows up later, the loss of Copper isn't felt as much. Or Cottonmouth, the loss of him isn't felt as much as you did towards the end of that.
Well, I got to say, I think, if anything, you realize that some of these properties need a script doctor or someone, because the motivations for Diamondback, you know, he was like, he was a half brother that wasn't as loved by their preacher father. You know, he was the favorite. I mean, it seemed a little lame to me.
Yeah.
And then the gentleman's acting wasn't. I mean, Mahershala Ali's acting. I mean, we see that now. He's getting all these accolades. I mean, the guy is just an excellent actor. Acting is everything. You know, when we spoke earlier about Finn Jones, not to go back into him, but whether he is athletically inclined, I mean, that's important. But really, how good of an actor are you is even more important than that. If you're just that kind of actor that can put in the work, you know, they'll work out something about your athletic prowess. Something else I wanted to mention, too, as far as the villains. I think Marvel, if you're going to be honest, is more or less hit or miss. There's aspects of Netflix that, to me, are really impressive. And almost, and I think I've told this to Daryl, there's aspects of the Netflix thing that make me more excited about Netflix movies than some of the actual MCU silver screen stuff. Because the stuff in Netflix, you have like 13 episodes to really go into character development. And you start to see, well, why the hell do I want to see a 2.5-hour movie when you see the development of a Wilson Fisk, when you see Wilson Fisk being abused as a child, how his father was like just really an a-hole, why Wilson Fisk is Wilson Fisk, how the relationship between Black Mariah and Cottonmouth as kids, and that cruelty. I mean, when you see that kind of character development, it's actually superior to seeing a 2.5-hour movie in the theater. So it's problematic, but some of the villains I actually thought were on point, and then, you know, so other ones are just hokey. So it's kind of hit or miss for me.
You know what? The one thing I want to reiterate again. All right, we all realize these are based on comic books, right? And so there's like this underlying commentary that they scoff at the idea of actually adorning a costume. They did it in Luke Cage when he walks by with the yellow shirt and the headband. And they did it in Jessica Jones, you know, mocking the idea that she wore a costume. I'm not saying, you know, you got to have a little sense of realism, because let's be honest, seeing guys walk around in spandex with their junk all hanging around would be kind of obscene. So I do think there's a little bit of it's kind of fun to at least acknowledge that these are superhero genre productions. And, you know, I think it'd be kind of nice to bring that back and at least have a little fun with it, because, you know, otherwise it's just another crime drama with, you know, characters that resemble these comic book, you know, fixtures that we grew up watching and reading. So I wish they would kind of involve that a little more. Again, this is why I love Daredevil so much, because, you know, they weren't ashamed to actually have him dress up in a costume. Mm-hmm. And it's that idea, you know, and again, like, I'm not saying that, you know, it's the worst thing about the shows. It's just that's what I see constant with all this, I don't know. Maybe some people like that. It's just for me, I always have to remind myself, hey, this is actually supposed to be, you know, about seeing superheroes and having fun and that's kind of its own genre now, isn't it? So,
well, look, to be honest with you, in the case of Luke Cage, I mean, his yellow and blue color schemes are pretty accurate. I mean, he is the way he looks is the way he looks and has looked for maybe more than a decade in comic books.
Yeah,
so,
I agree.
So I would not really want to see him in like this some silk yellow shirt and some chain around it. I mean, and some swashbuckling boots. I mean, that's just not going to translate well. I thought that they gave you a nod for the geeks, you know, say, and he said in the mirror image, I look like stupid. I look crazy. So I like the fact that, I mean, that's how he looks. He's been drawn that way for many years. So, even Alias, as far as Jessica Jones in Alias, going back to like the early aughts, she's also looks the way she's supposed to look. Everyone looks, and Daredevil wears a costume. The only one that doesn't wear a costume is Danny Rand. He has a tattoo, but that kind of thing is not going to translate well.
I was going to say one thing. I'm sorry. It's just that it seems like it almost is like mocking this ideal. You know, it's like, oh, you're right. I agree with the way the Luke Cage looks. I think it's perfect. But I mean, I was just using his point as an example that seems to be a constant with all the shows, that they like these little jabs at this idea. And then, of course, in the Marvel Universe movies, they're all adorning costumes. And it's kind of like an interesting observation on my part. And maybe it's kind of, maybe we can have somewhere meet in the middle, maybe. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just for fans listening out there, when Dez brings up Alias, not the Jennifer Garner show.
Oh, right, true,
there
yes.
was a comic book Alias that had Jessica Jones before she got big. Brian Michael Bendis wrote it, and it's a damn good book with her as a private eye. Essentially, her season one is, what, the first three trades of Alias?
Mm-hmm.
So folks out there, when he says Alias, he's referring to the Marvel comic book, not the TV show. See, Des, I could do the explaining.
Yeah. Jessica Jones has always been a retconned character. Like, the whole thing about her having been an Avenger as a teenager and all that kind of thing, I mean, that was just, like, retconned. The way the Sentry was also a make-believe retconned character. So we can't act as if her character history is really all that lengthy. She was kind of just brought in, and she was given a backstory as if she had existed with the Vision and Captain America. That's something that's kind of been retconned.
Mm-hmm. Now, I will be devil's advocate here, saying I don't think the superheroes, all the superheroes in the Marvel Netflix shows, should be wearing costumes. It goes to why the costumes changed in the X-Men movies. You don't want people who aren't familiar with the comics to be pulled too far out. I mean, that was the whole reason for the in-joke with the yellow spandex in the first X-Men movie. However, I think Marvel could be doing a lot more if they went the animated route that DC Universe has, because some of DC Universe's animated feature films are great. I am hoping that one of the future ones that they're going to do is Longbow Hunters, Green Arrow's Longbow Hunters. But that's a place where they can get in with the costumes and the lighter fare. But the New York that they've set up in the Marvel Netflix shows, it's after the incident in the Avengers, where the city's been trashed, where people now know that there's life beyond our galaxy that could come kill us and not even blink. It's a darker, more scary time, and people running around in bright yellow jumpsuits is just not going to inspire confidence or hope.
Well, that at the same time, and it's something I've said on the show, to me, the strongest component of any of these things has been the DC animated universe, because they're animated. They could bounce from serious to light to, oh my God, did that just happen? To, oh, this is so funny. So DC animated, and by the way, got them by Gaslight. Check
yes.
it out.
Mm-hmm.
They're very good. They did a good job on that. You know, they can do that. Hell, I keep on telling guys, yo, you should check out the Marvel, the Marvel CGI films, their United series, because that has a lot of the in-jokes. I believe it's Iron Man, Hulk, the latest one was Iron Man, Captain America, you know? But the problem is, Marvel doesn't do a good job of pushing that product. And when they have something that's good, Spectacular Spider-Man, Avengers, Earth's Mightiest Heroes, then they decide, yo, it's good, but we can streamline by giving us that Ultimate Spider-Man thing and then playing that, or Amazing Spider-Man, and playing that, oh, we're going to do Avengers Assembled in the same tone. And then that breaks off to go to the Marvel Spider-Man now, which is better than the last one, but it doesn't touch Spectacular. And this Marvel Secret Wars, where I love Miss Marvel as a character. No. If that's the version you want to bring into the movie with Captain Marvel, no. For the love of God, no. You know, so. But Summer, like I said, this is how I am on our program, where Dez has to reel me in, like, D, give it a chance. D, calm down.
Okay. Well, going that route, what upcoming Marvel shows are you looking forward to? Because, like I said, they're already in production for Jessica Jones season 2, for Luke Cage season 2. I don't know if they're going to get to Daredevil season 3 until next year. I don't know when they're doing Punisher. I don't know if they're going to do Heroes for Hire or Daughters of the Dragon. I'm with Darren. I would watch, you know, Daughters of the Dragon, like, for 2 weeks straight.
Yeah, well, I just think that I've been reading, again, this is all opinions, but it sounds like that's actually on the forefront, that it could be something in the future. So, you know, and we need more female heroines, you know, and that's, you've already got a baseline for that in the story. So I think it would be a win for everything, you know?
Well, you know, with Marvel, the one thing I find interesting is that they seem to be able to kind of do certain things on the fly. I mean, we know they have kind of a schematic on how they want the MCU to work. But then the way Punisher, I think Bernthal's characterization was so strong, they had to give him his own series. And then the fact that not only was it a killer in the ratings on Netflix, but they gave it was greenlighted for season 2 so quickly. So I guess what I'm saying is we can be expecting some of the, you know, the sequels to the seasons. But if we have an incidental character that comes on, if that actor knocks it out the park, there's nothing to stop that actor from yet developing another Netflix imprint. Like, I would want to see Blade on Netflix. I would want to see a horror genre really on Netflix. I mean, it's those kind of quote unquote street characters seem to work well, where it doesn't have to have an overabundance of CGI work for it to really, you know, for you to be engrossed. Like, you can't have a Guardians on Netflix, but you can have a horror imprint on Netflix. You can have a detective thing. Things that are more on the street obviously work better. And if the acting is on point, you should be able to go forward. But I would think that Daredevil 3 has to be pretty soon, because the last Daredevil was like 2016. So we're in 2018. So it's got to be coming up pretty soon.
You know, I just want to see more Misty Knight, because every time she's been on all the shows, I mean, Simone is just, she's an amazing actress, you know? And I just think she kind of is the glue. And I just really enjoyed all of her appearances. Kind of, I don't know, you need that moral compass that's human, or at least, you know, something you can identify with. And I think just having her be a part of a future and having her own, and being that excites me, and that's why I hope they don't like lose sight of that, because I think there are other people like myself who really enjoyed her character and want to see more.
She for the law can run true, just like how Rosario Dawson is all the heart and the morals, and the common sense running through all of them. Misty Knight can run through it, like, okay, we're doing this, but you gotta follow the law here. Like, seriously, got what did I tell you guys about doing that? Seriously, we aren't doing that. And plus, now with the arm, look at Coulson.
Yep.
Now with her arm, you know, she can be just like the comics, just like that, that could be the tether to bring in a Stark Industries. That could be like to bring in Shield, like Shield Tech. That could be another similar to them discussing what happened in Manhattan with the alien attack. You know, that could be a window, brief window to connect it. I'm not saying a total connection, because every time I bring up total connection, you get the Marvel diehard, like, no, we can't have TV and movies. We can't have them touching together.
They're already like, connected. What? They made that connection in season one of
the streams.
They did. They already did.
Yep.
Yeah.
But when they tried the couple that tried to assassinate Jessica Jones, they were going after her because of their family got killed by the alien attack. And she's like, go talk to the green guy. Go bother, you know, the guy in the tower down in Manhattan. I wasn't part of that. And Daredevil season one, the reporter, he had a picture of the incident framed in his office.
But guys don't notice this. They freak out so much.
They're not comic geeks, then. They need to be scolded. Look for the Easter eggs, damn it.
Well, you know something? That's an important question. I mean, that's something that's kind of going out there a lot. You know, these veiled references, like you just said, the green guy or the event to describe the invasion. When do you think we may see more of a real crossover kind of thing? I mean, I would love to see, you know, some kind of like appearance even in the MCU. I mean, if these guys are fighting in the middle of Manhattan for Infinity War, even as a joke, to see, like, this goes back to the Hero for Hire thing, but I imagined like something going on and you see Danny Rand and Luke like peeping their heads out of a storefront while stuff is going. I mean, it's got to be something to kind of connect these things together, just for the geeks.
I was hoping that a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent of some sort would show up on for Luke Cage, because how does he not go noticed? Unnoticed, I mean, by S.H.I.E.L.D.
well, that it jokes too, because the one thing about Netflix, the Marvel Netflix, is they love shooting shots on the street where you could see the background. Okay, you could see the skyline. All right. The problem is, where in the movies you place Avengers Tower, okay, it's a part in the middle of the skyline. So Avengers Tower is right here. Bap. You can see the Freedom Tower right here. Bap. You can see the Empire State Building right here. Bap. Okay. So you could see that all through there. As the Netflix characters are walking the street, you could see the Freedom Tower. Bap. You could see the Empire State Building. Bap. In the middle. Something's missing here in the middle. where's
the Baxter Building?
Tower?
The Baxter Building?
Baxter Building.
Hey, that Disney deal. We're supposed to see something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I will say this quickly about... You know, this is not a Netflix thing, but you did bring up S.H.I.E.L.D. And I've said this on many occasions on our show. I like S.H.I.E.L.D., especially in the last couple of seasons. This season is pretty good. But I thought that the mastery of Marvel Comics, the fact that they're the house of ideas, and they really are excellent in doing genre films. I mean, they've done genre comic books, horror comics, supernatural, you know, whatever you can think of, blaxploitation with Luke Cage, all these genres that are translating well to screen. I imagine S.H.I.E.L.D. could have been a billion-dollar movie property since it is a spy genre with superheroes, where you have Sam Jackson, you have Black Widow. Now Black Widow may get her solo film. But I didn't like the fact that they made it into a TV series when it could have been... I mean, you see these, you know, cars that where the wheels are inverted and they can fly around, or life model decoys, which we're just starting to see now. I mean, all that stuff as a spy genre unto itself under the Marvel umbrella, to me, pointed to $1 billion. I mean, I guess that's pretty much what Civil War was. But I have a problem with with S.H.I.E.L.D. as to what it could have been, as opposed to making it a TV series. That's just my opinion.
You know, what's funny is I've been watching S.H.I.E.L.D. since day one, and I've kind of, you know, this season has been somewhat interesting. I see what they're trying to do, but for me, my first in, you know, they were talking about bringing out this Mockingbird, you know, with Lance, you know, they were trying to maybe have that. And I was actually kind of excited about that. I don't know whatever happened with that. I know they buried that show idea, but I just, by moving this Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. to Friday nights, that tells me that they don't have a lot of confidence in the show. I don't know what the long-term future is for the show, but I just don't know how it can survive.
Well, let me tell you something on that. And Darryl knows where I'm going. There was a deal that was made for S.H.I.E.L.D. S.H.I.E.L.D. never really was a power hitter. I think that maybe the first season, out of curiosity, the ratings were doing very well. That's pretty much somewhat of an infomercial. I mean, I love it, but it's an acceptable loss for Marvel, because they make so much money on the movies that they are pretty much allowing that property to exist on ABC. By all purposes, it should have been canceled by season two, maybe season three. But they're allowing it to exist only because Disney has long pockets, deep pockets, but it's not what it really appears to be. They're just kind of letting that go.
And it keeps Marvel alive between the shows. You know, it's something that he is now beginning to realize. Having this show here between our movie keeps our buzz up on Twitter, keeps our buzz up on things. It wasn't until the Wonder Woman thing happened where DC realized the power of Twitter, or the power of social media when it comes to the movies, and that, oh shoot, we need to publicize these shows more. Okay, so now they go into overdrive trying to Justice League, Black Lightning, oh, we got the new season of Arrow coming up, but by now Arrow's kind of a lost cause. Oh, don't forget the Flash. Okay, so they have now seen what Marvel did with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., how that, and people that tweet that, and folks that follow my Twitter saw that I was live tweeting tonight's show, you know, just like, and but just that, Marvel's name, Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., that keeps on going. And then, boom, there's a Black Panther commercial. Boom, there's the picture of Brie Larson in the Captain Marvel uniform. Just having the show on TV helps the buzz. The problem is, eventually, the buzz, and you can see it starts to wane. You need to put substance behind the buzz. So last season, they rolled out Ghost Rider. Everybody got up about that. But now, hey, it rolled right into the Framework storyline. Okay? The thing about the Netflix shows is, they don't go for the buzz thing. Since you're getting a whole season in one shot, it's bap. There it is. There's the story. Bap. There it is. There's the story. And then they rely on us on social media to either talk up or pump up the show for those that aren't interested.
I got an observation and a question. After this Disney Fox deal, which, you know, listen, they're saying it could be a year and a half before the thing's actually finalized, and whether it deals with antitrust laws and monopolies and all that thing. I believe it's just going to go forward. You think that Marvel Universe is confusing now. What about the Fox stuff that is actually quite good? Legion is excellent. It's very psychedelic, but I love Legion. I think that The Gifted is very faithful to the X-Men, maybe even more faithful than the Singer X-Men, if you're going to be honest about it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, this was Fox stuff going on. How do we know who makes the cut, who doesn't make the cut, or are they going to actually bring these people in? You know, there was a whole controversy with the actress. I can't recollect her name, but she played the younger Storm. And now there's talk about, well, we want someone who looks more like Storm. I mean, to me, it's irrelevant. But she wants to keep her gig. And some of these other people that are in these other X-Men movies, they think that they're keeping their gigs. But, you know, I don't know what's going to happen with all these characters and how do they bring you know, Runaways is the beast now. I actually like Runaways. Cloak and Dagger looks like it could cross over with Runaways. I mean, how is this going to be made to make any sense with all these other properties that are allegedly coming into the fold from this deal.
I don't know. Hulu, I don't know who put up some of the money. Was it all Hulu for Runaways?
I think it was all Hulu.
Okay.
They put up, they went, we could do it ourselves with some of your guys' input. And here's where they aced it.
Mm-hmm.
They brought Brian K. Vaughan in from day one.
Nice.
To sit in with the writers. He's the guy who made the Runaways concept for the comic. So they went, we're going to adapt it for TV. You're the guy that created it. Sit down here. Let's do it. Like, what they didn't do with Preacher, you know, you needed Innes in that room to just go, yeah. I see where you guys want to go with this. We could tone this down a little bit, you know, where that's spun out. Or with Gotham, where you have an actual Batman writer in the room to go, well, if all the villains are here at his age right here, when he actually is Batman, what age are all the villains going to be?
Gotham.
You know, like, but Runaway did that, you know, where they're like, okay, yeah. Let's bring it back. We have the creator in the room, so we can't go crazy. That's something Netflix has done. They had Brian Michael Bendis there for Jessica Jones and consult on Daredevil. I mean, well, we would want Frank Miller, but we saw Frank Miller's the spirit. You know, I'm sorry, dude. I'm
not gonna blame Frank Miller totally for that. The spirit, somebody should have come in early on that and said, yo, dude, back to the drawing board. Start this all over again. I'm not going to go there. I'm just not going to go there. But don't get me angry. Seriously. But no.
Cloak and Dagger. I said it on my show. I'm the supervillain. So I will bring this stuff up.
Cloak and Dagger, I don't think will be a problem because Freeform is an ABC network. So yep. It's in the same good place that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. could be. I'm not going to talk about any future Storm movies because as far as I'm concerned, Fox messed up by firing Angela Bassett and bringing on Halle Berry as Storm because Angela Bassett was Storm back then as far as I was concerned. But I don't see a problem with getting all new characters, all new actors for a whole new slew of X-Men that are tied more into the MCU. Because if you remember, that was what the whole fight about Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch was. Because Fox wanted to keep them, and Marvel's like, no, they were Avengers first. We got them. And the court sided with Marvel, which pissed off Fox. But that's how they got into the Avengers movies. Killing off Quicksilver, I don't know what the hell that was all about. But
that was an appeasement.
Bad move.
That was an appeasement,
Still a bad move.
Well, unfortunately, one of the chief complaints about the MCU is that, you know, the Marvel movies versus Netflix. People do die in Netflix. And in Marvel movies, not so much.
Mm-hmm.
And we may see the return because of the time gem. We don't know what's going to happen when it comes down to this Infinity War. But I think they've already said that we might see, Agent Carter may be making a return.
That is something that needs to happen because that show should not have been canceled. That was a fun show. That's where
in the
fun
movies.
Was.
Let me
oh,
be mindful.
In the movies.
In the movie, like that character, Sharon what's her name? Daryl Sharon Carter or because there was the aunt and the daughter.
Sharon.
Yeah, Sharon
was the one who was in the first Captain America movie.
Yeah, Peggy Carter.
Peggy,
the niece or something. But yeah, but.
No,
Sharon
Peggy.
Carter.
Peggy's was with Steve Rogers. Sharon was Emily Blunt's character, right?
That's right, right. So Peggy may end up because of a time gem situation, being herself. That may be something that's kind of weirded out, but she may be back
as her younger self in the current universe.
Exactly.
Okay,
meandering. So if that's going to happen, we might see Quicksilver. Quicksilver's too interesting a character. I mean, I just can't imagine him like he's going to come back. Or there's even a hint of the hex powers from his sister having something to do with that. They're going to do something.
Oh God,
Yeah, before I even hit to that.
But how is that going to work?
Comic book fan, I get a headache.
How is that going to work?
There it goes. See,
House of M.
Right.
House of M.
You know, no.
What's interesting to me is, like, underlying all this, I've read that, you know, Kevin Feige and or whatever his name is for all the you know, for the big screen doesn't get along with the showrunner of the Netflix stuff, and there's like a constant battle between those two, and I'm just interested in what's going to happen with that relationship and who's going to, you know, or they just keep them separated for the long term anyway.
Yeah, separate corners. Oh, okay. My goodness. You pissed me off now with the Agent Carter thing, because if they bring back Peggy Carter and they kill off Steve Rogers, if they bring back Peggy Carter as a younger version and kill off Chris Evans as Steve Rogers to make room for Bucky as Captain America, what? Dude, you can't do that.
Well, listen, these phases are going to end up being over. I mean, we're talking about a good 10-year run since 2008 of all these phases. So they've been hinting that there may be a completely different thing going on with Marvel. Because you have to think about it. You got to go through, you know, Black Panther is coming up. Then there's going to be a sequel for that. There's a Captain Marvel the following year, a sequel for that. Doctor Strange has a 2 coming. Guardians 3. So at some point, they're going to have to phase into something completely different. What it is, I have no idea.
Final thoughts from everyone on the prospect, the future, bright, shiny, or dark and gritty of the Marvel Netflix shows.
Darren, let's hear from you first, and I'll go on.
Well, I mean, I'm excited, and not to see, but I'm very glad that I'm even, you know, we're all even getting this opportunity to live in this world where we actually get in this type of programming. You know, growing up as a kid, I used to get excited just to see superheroes on Saturday Night Live, you know, you know, and like, oh my God, or just anything that had to do with superheroes was, you know, and if you had told me when I was a child that we would be here, I wouldn't have believed it, you know, and I think just because of the advent of CGI, it's made things that were never possible before, you know, even more possible. And I think I'm excited about the future. I'm not exactly excited about Disney owning everything for it, because that's always kind of a scary proposition. But I really hope they put the right people in the right positions to connect to the geeks and also to all fans alike. And I think that's not easy to do, because, you know, people like us have high expectations, and then they also have to sell tickets. So there's this kind of a interesting relationship, and maybe we'll get the Netflix future shows to appease those geeks. And then maybe, I don't know, but like I said, I'm just happy and I'm excited for the future. I'm definitely excited for Luke Cage too. So yeah, who knows? Again, my only biggest complaint is, again, this the sense of downtrodden and so, but again, maybe if I see him spar, you know, not back to back to back, it'll not be so obvious. So, but yeah, I'm excited, man.
Yeah, the sky is just really the sky is up for this. I have no real complaints for the Netflix future. If anything, I would want to see some certain things expanded. But as far as the seriousness and the acting level, I mean, some of the acting is just so, like, again, Vincent D'Onofrio is just excellent. Bernthal, Coulter, you know, Alfre Woodard, for Christ's sake. I mean, they really have stellar talent coming to the table. So as long as they keep that going, and maybe we're spoiled. I have to concur with Darren that, you know, for someone who was going to these comic book shows when I was a kid, my parents would take me to these goofy comic book conventions back before the spectacles that they are now, yeah. And going into the comic book stores in Long Island. And being excited about that. And also, like you just said, you made me think about John Belushi as the Hulk or Sinbad as Black Lightning. The first Black Lightning was Sinbad. You know, his belly hanging out and all that kind of stuff. You know, to where we are now, where everyone is kind of imbibing on the stuff that we always knew. I mean, this was serialized entertainment. I knew that as a kid. Like, I knew, like, wait a minute, this is so much like a soap opera. Why isn't everybody else into this? You know, the cliffhangers, that whole thing is so endemic to entertainment. Why is it just like this hidden, this secret in the comic book store. So now we're kind of at this place where everybody, you know, I mean, I, even when I'm at my job in a corporate environment, you know, if a VP comes up to me, this is a true story. He says, "Desmond, listen, you have a serious thing, the Microsoft Excel. Come to my office right away. Close the door." What's up? "Hey, forget about that. Did you see the Netflix thing? Or, you know, look at my Funko, my Funko properties on my desk." So, I mean, this is true stuff. So the geeks find each other. So it's really taking over the world as far as this culture, nerd culture has taken over. So, you know, the sky's the limit. Just as long as the quality remains quality, I think we'll be in good shape.
Cool. We have some communications issues here, but we'll work them out. But we're done. We're almost done. Daryl had some issues. His computer decided to tell him he'd talked enough for tonight. But
Ultron. Ultron.
That's okay. We will have everyone, all you guys, back on for a future show. I'm quite certain of it. Thank you guys for joining in this discussion today.
Great. It was fun.
Thank you, Summer. Pleasure. Definitely enjoyed it.
And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
Slice of Sci-Fi.
Well, this show has already run a lot longer than I intended, but admit it, that was a really, really fun conversation. I want to thank Daryl, Desmond, and of course our own Darren for waxing poetic about some of our favorite comic book heroes, titles, and shows. We have more coming up, probably when the next round of movies comes out, for sure. And I think we're going to have some talking about the DC shows pretty soon, because we have Gotham by Gaslight, a new animated feature coming out from DC. We have Black Lightning, which I think is an amazing show. I have fallen behind on Supergirl and Flash, so I'm not currently inclined to catch up yet. So maybe when I get Netflix again, I'll buzz through those and see what's what. But for me, the next thing I'm looking forward to is Altered Carbon, which is on Netflix, so I have a reason to go get Netflix before next Friday. Altered Carbon is based on a series of novels by Richard Morgan. Go check them out if you haven't. Mine are deep in storage someplace. I haven't seen those books in 3 years. That's how deep in storage they are. But I highly recommend them. If you haven't yet read them, check out the series, then go read the book. Yeah, that's my story and I'm sticking to it. But either way, if you have any questions or comments on DC Comics, Marvel Comics, or Altered Carbon, call in. The number is 602-635-6976 or send an email to summer@sliceofscifi.com. You can listen to Slice of Sci-Fi on iTunes, on Stitcher, on TuneIn, and on Krypton Radio. If you're listening on iTunes or Stitcher, leave a review. Let people know that you are enjoying the show, and maybe they'll enjoy it too. Check us out on Twitter. We're at Slice of Sci-Fi. Check us out on Facebook and on YouTube. We're Slice of Sci-Fi over there. And of course, there is the website, sliceofscifi.com. Come on over, leave comments on the movie reviews or the commentary or the shows. We also have popculturegeeks.com and writersafterdark.com. And you can support all three ventures by helping add your pledges to our Patreon campaign. You can find out more about that at patreon.com/sliceofscifi. All of your pledges do support the shows. They help pay for the web hosting for the websites, hosting for the media, hosting for the shows. Every dime helps. If you go to the show notes, you'll also see a paypal.me link if you want to make a one-time donation. And like I said, every penny you guys send in helps a lot. Thank you. I appreciate it. and the support you continue to show really, really does mean a lot. So thank you all. I also want to throw out my heartfelt thanks to the geek rock band Cy-Fried for their musical contribution to this show. I'm a rock and roll girl, and they are a rock and roll band. Go check them out. You can find out more about them and their music over at cy-fried.com. But that will do it for this episode. And we will be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week. Take care.